Kent Biz Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Kent Biz Connect, the bi-weekly business radio show that promotes and connects businesses in Kent to do business with my wonderful co-host...
Tracy, back again.
Tracy yep. Westall, welcome, Tracy. Lovely
Thank
to
you.
See you again.
And you.
And myself, Martin White. And we've got two fabulous studio guests with us, as always, today. To my right, we have...
Adrian Danzi from McIntyre Hudson.
Adrian, welcome to the show. And
Thank
to
you.
Your right...
He's Greg Taylor from McIntyre Hudson.
Greg, welcome to the show. So I think it's fair to say...
It's all McIntyre Hudson.
It's
today.
McIntyre Hudson.
It's the McIntyre Hudson show.
McIntyre Hudson show. We'll be rebranding shortly. But I think it's fair to say we'll be talking about money...
Money, money, money.
And finance today, won't
yep.
we? So, yeah. We normally have three parts to the show, which is... our two guests, and then we kick off with some business news. But I think what we'll do is we'll roll both of you guys into one cuddly sausage roll today, if we can. But we will start off with some very topical business news. So, Tracy, you've been scouring the news. What is going on out there?
Well, I've been looking at the food and, well, mainly drink industry. There seem to be some lovely little things going on in Kent at the moment. The Whitsport Oyster Company have revealed plans to build a brewery in Herne Bay, which sounds really great. And they're looking at having 11 fermenting tanks, bottling and canning station Ooh. With a kitchen. As well. So they're obviously going to be doing food there. And it's really nice along that coastline. And it's good to see somebody wanting to diversify in what's turning out to be a really big industry of microbreweries. Mm. And I know that Kevin, my business partner, will be leaping up with joy for another pub to go and visit. So that's really good. And also it gives an opportunity for other people to go to other places, go and see what they do. I mean, obviously, we've got the Curious Brewery and various others in Kent, and they're all doing really fantastically well, which is really good to see.
Why is that then? What is it about these kind of smaller producers, much more kind of localised in terms of focus and target market? Guys, let's open this up. Why are those businesses doing well when perhaps a sort of a branded business with a restaurateur's name over the shop isn't doing so well at the moment?
Well, I think it's down to confusion, and I think a lot of these establishments now, you walk in and you're not quite sure what they're offering, and what these bigger establishments are trying to do are trying to please the whole market or the whole load of customers walking in, whether it's sport in one part of the building or food in another, and obviously having a drink. But I think what happens then impacts on one or the other. People don't want a crowd of people watching sport. They'd rather go to a quiet establishment, a small establishment, where they can actually talk to people, like a micro pub. And there are quite a number of these large pubs that are suffering, because now you've got Witherspoon, which effectively is starting to replace the traditional social club. Young people don't want to sit in these sort of like 60s, 70s style places, and they go to Witherspoon, which is a little bit more upmarket, although they're a little bit soulless, but the drinks are
reasonably
priced.
Cheap, but
that's
they
right.
don't have any music, and I think
it's a meeting point. It's a meeting point. You can eat there as well.
So when you try and be a sort of jack of all trades, catering nationally, up and down the country, across, food, drink, music, it kind of does something's going to be the poor relation.
I think we're going to be moving away from that. If I just very touch it very briefly, it's the same with fashion. Young people don't like to go to that's why House of Fraser, for example, suffered. But young people don't want to see different brands. They rather go to a branded shop. My daughters tell me this. They go to an Adidas shop or Nike. In New York, they couldn't believe what they were seeing. Rather than Night trainers in a Sports
Debenhams.
Direct
or wherever.
So
that's interesting, isn't it? So much more niche, much more specialist.
Definitely.
So that's the future.
And I think you're right. I think you're right, and that's what I've always said. I you know, I think the future of our high streets is going to go back to maybe the turn of the century where they were individual shops. I mean, you know, you go to most towns 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they all had a Debenhams, they all had an Alston Fraser, they all had a Marks and Spencers. They were a clone of another town that you can just drive to. Whereas I think more and more people are looking for something a bit more different. And I think that's why a lot of people do shop online, because a lot of them now buy things from like Etsy and places like that, where little small homegrown mother's businesses, you know, people who've got kids and stuff like that, they're at home making these really lovely little things that sell it online. And if that can be transformed into the high street, then I think high streets will come back with a big boom, because people will go to particular high streets because they've got particular shops you can't go to any
That's a really good point, isn't it? Because the more commoditized you become, I guess, as a, you know, as a product or a service, and you know, your restaurant example is a good one, isn't it? You're not now anything in particular. You're not Italian, you're not French, you're not, you're just food.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then, you know, then it comes down to price, doesn't it? And it's like, well, why would I go and pay more for a garlic bread in your restaurant than I can get in this restaurant, which is also commoditized and it's just selling food? It's
That's right. And I think you've seen in recent years that I think the public have woken up, you know, to the celebrity name above the door, you know, is beginning to sort of like come home to roost. The food is not actually that good in there. Now, when they're opening the blaze of publicity on this advert, they're showing, you know, using fresh food and everybody enjoying themselves, et cetera, et cetera. But that's all for the camera. A year down the line, you go in there and you're not going to be eating that food that what they was cooking fresh. And, you know, and the facts and the stats are there. You know, Jamie Oliver's had to close last year, you know, a lot of his restaurants. Not that I wanted to mention names.
You weren't going to mention
names.
No,
but it's out there. But it's public news anyway.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting point.
But I think that also I really do like going to the smaller restaurants.
Independent.
I mean, there's a fantastic Greek restaurant out near Sittingbourne. It is in the middle of nowhere, but I tell you what, you go there, it is like you're on holiday. Yeah. The food is absolutely amazing. Absolutely fantastic Cypriot food, and it, you know, and it's nice. So even if you have to drive there, you'd go there because you know you're going to get a really nice fresh meal. You know, and the other news story I wanted to pick up on, still on booze, I have to say, is the fact that over at Tunbridge Wells they're opening more and more pubs, which is really good to see. And I think that you're right where, you know, this particular lady, she's opened a pub. She used to work at up in London in St Pancras, the I'm just trying to think of the name of it. I was only there last week. Betchman.
Oh, yes.
And which is a really nice pub at St Pancras. But she's now come and helped with the opening of this pub. And they're doing a lot of different things during the week and during the daytime. They're letting people with children in, mothers, they have mother groups and things like that where mothers can just go and chat and what have you. But it's not like a child's pub, you know, with a. Do you know what I mean? With when you've got like an area with all the.
Well, they're probably drinking orange juice or mineral water or whatever.
And also they let dogs in, which, to be fair, I'm a dog owner, and it really drives me crazy if I'm out on a Sunday for a walk and I'll go past a pub and I go, I'd love to have a nice bite to eat, and they won't let a dog in. You know, I know my boy does like his food, but, you know, he's quite well trained, to be honest with you.
That's a really interesting point, though, because it's not a golden ticket, is it, necessarily? You know, you just mentioned St Pancras. So, you know, one of our local success stories in Kent, Chapel Down, have just closed.
Yes, they have,
Gin restaurant stroke pub stroke distillery, haven't they?
Yeah, up in King's Cross.
So why do we think that hasn't necessarily worked? Adrian,
the competition
what's
your now. Competition. If it is where I think it is, you come out of St Pancras, King's Cross, it's saturated. Yes, there is a big market, but they're all competing quite fiercely. And if there's ones that are established and then you suddenly, you're a new kid on the block, you're going to really, really pull out all the stops. And I don't know what the pricing is like or if that's got to do anything with it, but I think a lot of the, I mean, you know, if you go to other places of London, they're, you know, like say in Chinatown or areas where you know there's lots of restaurants, but they've been there a long time, but suddenly if you try to be an addition.
A new kid on the block, yeah. So to speak. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You've got to have money to throw at it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Huge amounts.
The rent.
And offering something different. I don't know this one in London, what exactly they were offering, or, you know, how they differ to what else is. I mean, they must have done their due diligence and their research and so on.
Mm. And let's face it, you know, Chapel Down as a brand, you know, how well is it known outside of Kent?
They supplied the champagne to Prince Harry's.
Yes, they did.
Wedding. Prince William, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was Harry's.
Mm. Sparkling wine.
Exactly.
Not champagne.
Not champagne. No.
So it is, it is about knowing your market then. That's what we're kind of coming back to, isn't it? And, you know, that's why local businesses with a very clear kind of, proposition in terms of their value add, catering for a local market, you know, they're doing quite well.
They are. In fact, just remembered, last week in Gillingham, the name escapes me, but there was a micro pub in the heart of Gillingham, and they're moving to larger premises because their customers are coming back. But there's not enough room for them, because they are generally quite small venues, and obviously they've spoken to their customers and they passed the message on, but they can't accommodate. But so now they've found some new premises to expand.
Good. So that's music.
Music to our ears, I think, and I like that, and I also like the. We've got a couple near where I live, and they are really good, and they are really gearing to the market of the people that actually go to these places. Whereas you said before, with the larger businesses, it's like chuck all the bottles in there, chuck the menus out there,
that's right.
They'll come. You know, it really doesn't matter. Whereas these smaller businesses do care.
You're kind of forced to start talking to one another. So it's like going back 40 years where you go in, there's no TV, there's no music.
And some of them, you're not even allowed to take a phone call, or you get fined.
You start interacting.
There's one in Brighton where they've leaded the roof. But actually the mobile phone doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's great, isn't it?
But it's not just food and drink. I think there's lessons for everybody there. Because I was saying that, you know, I was in a very large national electrical retail chain last weekend buying a new laptop. And, you know, going back to what you were saying, Adi, about, the original kind of brand proposition being watered down. You know, it started as an Italian restaurant. Now it's just, you know, general fodder.
Yeah.
You know, also rang true for this particular retailer in terms of not being able to deliver on their brand promise, as far as I was concerned. It's all very well being able to sort of pile them high, sell them cheap on electrical goods, you know, whether it be brown goods, white goods or whatever. But when you start moving into the kind of the world of laptop computers and PCs and, you know, where actually you need a much more individual service and advice.
That's right.
And ultimately support. If you're going to offer that, you've got to flipping well deliver it. Because if I go in there and I have a bad experience, I'm not going to go in there again. And in fact, I may not even buy anything from you at all.
Bearing in mind, Martin is quite a calm, collective person.
Normally.
I have to say that I think this particular episode did rile him, and he nearly came off his rails.
Well, and the point I would make there is, you know, why should a customer have to get angry before they actually get what you're promising you deliver?
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. It shouldn't have to be like that, should it?
Yep.
So, you know, when we talk about the kind of the malaise in retail, you know, let's be clear that I'd be quite happy paying more money for my laptop, you know, in a store where I can actually physically see it and get advice than, you know, taking potluck on the internet.
Mm.
Okay, so it's cost me a bit more money. Do you know what? I don't care, because I know 100% that I've got what I wanted. And okay, it's cost me another 100 quid. I don't care, because I use it every single day. And actually, it's got to be fit for purpose. And you've helped me through that process.
Yeah.
And I can't get that if I buy it online. You know, that's the reality. So, you know, you've got to be able to deliver what you promise, and you've got to have happy customers at the end of the day. That's what business is all about, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, well, businesses have to evolve. And instead of spending their profits to reinvest in their profits. And we mentioned one or two casualties before we came on air.
We were talking about asset stripping, weren't we?
We were.
And kind of, you know, I mean, we were talking about, you know, the number of kind of high-profile brand names that have gone to the wall. And you're saying, actually, a lot of the time, they're backed with private equity or...
That's right.
Just explain that.
Hedge funds, private equity, private stakeholders. You know, they see a successful business and they want a slice of it, but they're not prepared to grow the business. You know, they want to...
They don't want to invest.
They want their money out.
They want to take the profit.
They want their return quickly. Mm. Unfortunately, as one or two well-known brands, that's exactly what happened. Mm. And in those particular stores, even a young person walk in and you walk in and it looks tired, you're not quite sure what they're selling, and you know, and it confuses the customer. Mm. And without naming names, I think you could probably guess one or two of them. Mm. But interestingly, I saw something the other day. It's again, it's in this probably is that when Comet went into administration in 2008, I think Deloitte have just been fined a huge amount of money for how they managed. Well, I say a huge amount of money, £1 million, but
To the old layman, that's a lot of money.
It is, absolutely. So perhaps the message, you know, because the big four firms of accountants tend to be a little bit bulletproof, you know, slap on the wrist and they move on. So I'd like to see a little bit more publicity, like, you know, because unfortunately during that period we all get painted with the same with the same brush, you know. And in that particular instance, I think it was Woolworths actually, where they failed to do the consultation, and then they got a record fine from the government as well. Mm-hmm. They tried to appeal it and lost. So, but unfortunately, something like that, you know, there were to a degree, it was difficult because there was obviously thousands of employees, etc., and it was all about consultation. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that there'll be some.
But the point we're making is that these venture capital firms, private equity firms, investment funds, you know, they have the shareholders' interests at heart.
And why do you have to ask yourself a question? Why now, over the last few years, as the Americans come over to invest our businesses, because of, I think, the exchange rate.
Mm.
I think that helps. Mm. I talked to lawyers, corporate lawyers in Kent, and they're doing mainly American transactions or mergers with
American because
customers.
We've got historically established strong brand names.
Yeah, that's right.
That they see value in from a kind of a, you know, for want of a better word, from an asset stripping point of view.
And as Donald Trump said, everything's on the table, although he did backtrack and say the NHS is not on the table.
Yes. So it's really interesting, isn't it? Because ultimately, you know, without customers, you haven't got a business. You know, that's the bottom line. So it's very short-sighted, isn't it? But then it's a short-term kind of scenario for them.
Yeah.
They, what is their investment window? What does it look like? It's 5 years, maybe.
That's right.
Okay, I'll plough 50, 60 million in. 5 years, I'm out. Okay, so how am I going to get my money back? Plus, you know, what are you looking at? A sixfold return on that money.
It just depends on the industry.
Of course it does. Mm. But if I'm looking to get 200 million out in 5 years on a 50 million now, how am I going to do that? Well, I'll sell the freehold. You know, to the properties, you know, the real estate you own is worth a fortune. You know, there's all sorts of ways that, you know, savvy business people in that space can actually take money out of a business, isn't there?
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people were doing a lot of asset stripping when 2009 we had this so-called recession.
I call it a phony recession.
So do I. but before that, a lot of businesses did have assets.
Yeah, absolutely.
They owned cars. They didn't hire purchase them. Mm-hmm. They didn't lease buildings and office space.
No.
You know, their asset register, when you look back, was quite substantial.
The balance sheet was fantastic.
Exactly. But now everything's leased, hired, rented.
Yep.
You know, and the only pure asset they actually hold, majority of them, is an aged debt, which is where all the invoice sits.
Yeah,
and if you're not collecting that either, you know, you are going to get into all kinds of trouble because you've got nothing else to latch onto because you don't own anything else.
That's right.
And, you know, and I think that from asset stripping from the inside out has been something that's been happening since then anyway. And then when they've got nothing else to give, and then somebody's going, well, I'm going to take what you've got, but I'm going to literally have the land that you own.
And nothing and then, was a no-go zone, was it? I mean, pension funds became...
Yeah.
You know, became an asset all of a sudden that you could borrow money against. You think, oh, hang on a minute.
Now they've got holes to fill now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
The big thing. Yeah, they've got some of them have got massive holes to fill. Yeah.
Interesting point that we just said then, now, because we've seen over the last few years the emergence of what we call lifestyle directors.
Yeah.
Now, these are directors, maybe more than one company. They don't actually own anything, both in the company and individually. And if they allow the company to go to the wall, they're at liberty to start again, subject to any potential disqualification. And they sit there at the creditors' meeting with, you know, and people, you know, people shouting and hollering, and they just sit there and say, well, you know, we're going to start up again. I mean, 30 years ago, you know, our directors would disappear out of the country because they couldn't face their creditors. But now... Mm.
Now there's just this big thing about it. The big problem is...
Yeah, go on, that's right.
And the big problem is...
The Phoenix companies sort of re-emerge the next day under a different name.
This is it. And I think that, you know, for smaller businesses like SMEs, they're the ones that get stung the most because obviously you've got these businesses, and not all businesses are like this at all, but you've got some businesses where... SMEs think, I really need to have a good contract with these guys because they're really, really, really good.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they get stung. They get stung for months and months and months and months. They're caught up in the whole thing. Either they go bust because the lead is not paying them the money, or the other thing happens is that the big company goes bust. And then all the SMEs that owed all this money are now in a whole load of trouble because there is nothing on a return on a liquidation.
Mm. Correct. That's absolutely right.
But I think Greg, go on.
There are some issues here around structures and stuff as well and where the economy's gone. So I think post-2007, 2008, a lot of manufacturing has disappeared, a lot of engineering has disappeared where you would traditionally have assets, and it has become more tech-based where you don't need that asset base. And I think the other thing is accountants have got a lot and business owners have got a lot smarter. So they do have assets, but the way that their companies are now structured, they put them off balance sheet.
Yes.
So they're in pension, they're buying private pension funds for properties and things like that. And I think the average business owner is a lot smarter than they used to be.
Yeah. All the money is, as you say, Greg, the money is tied up in the IP. I mean, look at businesses like Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Twitter doesn't make any money at all.
No.
And yet it probably has a market cap, you know, in the billions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that kind of scenario, isn't it? You know, there's an anticipation that one day it might make money, but it doesn't at the moment. But it's still worth billions of dollars.
That's right. We're seeing very, very less of physical assets in our instructions. As you say, Greg, it's mainly intangibles, whether it's IPR, intellectual property right, and goodwill, trade name, domain name, which is very difficult to place value because it's probably only worth what someone's prepared to pay for it.
I don't even think LinkedIn makes money, does it? I think LinkedIn is a huge loss-making. I think Microsoft own it now. And you can tell how the tide is turning because it gets much more commercially focused. It's, you know, they're really selling their job advertising.
Yes.
You know, on LinkedIn at the moment, you know, they are becoming a job site platform, and you think, well, actually, no, they're not. They're a professional social media network.
Yes,
but they make their money from selling job advertising. Yeah. That's the reality.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's interesting. But Tracy, you mentioned a really good point about you know, how businesses need to safeguard themselves in this whole kind of this whole chain that we're all kind of in. So you've got something that's happening, haven't you, in March that might actually help people with that?
Yeah, well, I'm a member of the Chartered Institute of Credit Management. They've been going for over 80 years, and it is specifically geared to getting paid. That's it. If you're in business and you need to get paid, that's what they basically do. We are committee members. Even Adrian, I'm persuading him to be a committee member in our next AGM this month. He doesn't know it yet.
I haven't been asked, Adrian.
I'm honoured.
Being a member of the CICM.
I mean, we've got to do more work.
But, the Kent branch itself has decided this year, we do lots of different events throughout the year, but what we wanted to do is we actually wanted to engage with Kent businesses. Mm. And we have put together a business finance conference. It's a whole day event. It's at the Grand in Folkestone. It's on Tuesday the 17th of March, 9 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. You can actually book a space on this on Eventbrite. Just put in CICM in Kent and it will come up. And it costs £25, but that money will be going to a local charity. So we are also trying to raise money for local charities there. But we've got some great speakers. We've got Alison Palmer from FSB. She's going to be talking a lot about what the CICM have done in the past, the FSB, and also Philip King, who was the CICM CEO, is now the Small Business Commissioner.
Right.
And he's been a keen player in the prompt payment code, mm-hmm. which he has now taken off from the CICM into the Small Business Commission. And she'll be talking a lot about that. Kevin Artlett, he will be talking about the advantages of being a CICM member. So if you have a job and you're collecting, that job is credit control, and you're collecting money and you're safeguarding that asset within a business, then you're entitled to get membership and being a member of the CICM. So he's going to be talking all about that, the qualifications, the membership, apprenticeship schemes, the whole kit and caboodle. I will be talking about, obviously, what my passion is about, is all the front end. How do you start with credit management in a business? The key elements to making things work properly and work right. Also got Carl Haig. He is going to be talking about loss prevention, protection and cure through credit insurance. Now, there's a lot of businesses out there that don't realise you can actually get credit insurance. Then we have the lovely...
Lunch, hopefully.
Yes, after lunch. After lunch, yes.
That's what sold it to me.
The graveyard slot. Yeah.
The graveyard slot, as Adrian calls it. But we've got Greg Taylor, who's obviously here today. He's going to be talking financial solutions. So everything that you need to know about how to get finance, the ways and means of getting finance, and also the myth of what is out there, because there's so many different finance opportunities for businesses. And then we got Adrian. He's last but not means least.
He'd been wielding his sickle.
Everybody would have gone home by then.
No, he will be doing one of the most important talks of the day, which is, if you are ever in any issues, it's about being proactive, being honest with yourself. If your business seems to be on a bit of an uneven keel, then giving an insolvency practitioner like Adrian a call can make a massive difference in your business.
If you do it early enough.
If you do it early enough. That's right. And that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've recently seen a business that, you know, it's such a shame, because the guy that was running this business, he had so many aspirations and everything else, but he just really didn't have the know-how and understanding about all these bits to do with getting paid, et cetera, et cetera. And also the biggest problem, well, one of the biggest problems, was the fact that he got a finance deal and it literally stripped him completely on the interest rates. Right. So there's a lot of information that day, and it's going to be, you know, it's £25. Mm. You get fed, to be fair. I've looked at the menu. It's quite yummy. Mm-hmm.
Good value. Good value.
Brilliant value for money.
Great location as well. Grand Hotel Folkestone. Yeah. Great venue.
And, you know, and also there's a lot of opportunity for businesses to be able to network and to chat and to chat openly. And if anyone wants to speak to us after the event, then we are all very happy to have a conversation.
Brilliant. So how many people are you expecting, and what type of businesses, or is it open to professionals and business owners?
It's open to professional and business owners, but we're looking more at the medium SMEs with employees, with people that are actually doing the job as in credit control, looking to really speak to the finance directors and the directors of these businesses, and to bring their staff along, because this is such an educational thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, and if they come along, and a bit of knowledge is going to go such a long way for a business. Mm. And as I say, there's going to be quite a lot of people there. that's gonna. They're all
and
experts.
Get some advice
and get some free advice. Exactly.
And get some good advice. And yeah, again, exactly. We see so much poor advice in the marketplace on occasions, and you know, £25 for
25
a whole day
quid
of
for a whole day of advice.
Gosh, how much would it cost you for an hour of somebody's time in a kind of in a professional services context?
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay, Tracy, thank you so much for that. We might come back to that a little bit later on.
Yep.
But I think what we're going to do, I can't believe it, we've been rabbiting away for half an hour here.
Wow.
We're going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to come back and talk to Adrian and Greg in a bit more detail. So we will see you on the other side of this.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. That was a song called For the Love of Money. Tracy, don't look at me all confused and nonplussed.
Well, no, I'm actually surprised you actually got something in there that's not as tenuous.
Something vaguely relevant by the OJs. Yeah, a little bit old and dated, perhaps. But
hey, look, you know, that's showing your age, babe. But
that's me again, isn't it? That's me, sort of through and through. So, I mean, it is very much the theme of today is very much around money. So, obviously, that was the kind of the link there. So, we're going to talk in a bit more detail now to our two studio guests. We've got Greg Taylor. And we've got Adrian Dante, both from MHA McIntyre Hudson. And I think what I'd like to do, guys, is talk initially about who MHA McIntyre Hudson are, because I think we're taking it for granted that people know who you are, but they may not necessarily do that. So tell us in your own words what you're all about and what you do, and perhaps your individual roles within that.
Okay, so MHA McIntyre Hudson is a accountancy firm that's predominantly based within the home counties. It's a top 15 UK accountancy firm. There's three parts to the group, which I know you really enjoy that bit, Mark. So you've got the local firm presence, which is MHA McIntyre Hudson branded offices. You've then got the wider MHA group, which are associated accountancy firms, branded MHA, but with their own name that come after it. And then you have the international part of the business, which is Baker Tilly International, for which McIntyre Hudson are the UK firm.
Right, I see. Okay. So the Baker Tilly and the MHA presumably were the result of mergers, consolidation at some point in the marketplace? Or?
No, so the wider MHA group was a desire from McIntyre Hudson, and particularly from the chairman, Rakesh, to be a national firm and have some national coverage, to share resources with other accountancy firms, because clearly, you know, nobody knows everything. So to use specialist expertise outside of the group. And that's what we do. It's driven by MHA McIntyre Hudson, but those member firms are very important to us. The local one for this kind of area would be Carpenter Box.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've then got the Baker Tilly side of things, which is, again, very important to us. It gives us an international reach.
Right.
It gives us expertise, particularly for companies that export, et cetera,
right,
for that kind of expertise, for transfer pricing and all those really exciting things, Martin.
That makes sense.
That I know nothing about.
So it's all about plugging in individual specialisms so that you've got a kind of a much more complete service offering. So going back to what Adrian was talking about earlier, kind of, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. With you, it's very much kind of the opposite. It's turning that on its head and actually saying, look, we have got specialist business functions and operations under the brand umbrella that actually manage those different functions for businesses.
Absolutely, but at the same time, I think feeding into what we were talking about, McIntyre Hudson very much understands its market, which is entrepreneurial businesses.
Right.
So we don't have a lot of gentry, we don't have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of self-made people, a lot of smaller SMEs, uh-huh, a lot of mid-sized SMEs that are going on a journey. And that's where our advice is geared.
Okay, that's really interesting because, so coming to your kind of individual roles within the firm then, because you are the finance specialist partner, aren't you, within MHA McIntyre Hudson here in Kent.
Yep.
So you help businesses, those kind of growing entrepreneurial businesses, access finance, presumably, to help their business grow. Just tell us a little bit more about that side of it.
I'm a partner at McIntyre Hudson, mm-hmm, and I run, or I'm head of MHA Financial Solutions, which is the brokerage intermediary side of the business, which exactly as you said, helps businesses get access to finance, where either the bank has turned them down or perhaps they feel that the bank isn't the best option for them. Mm. The finance they may be looking for may be a bit quirky, it may be a bit outside of the box, or it may be vanilla and they just want to do a market research to make sure that what they're being offered is the best that is available to them.
Right, okay. And as accountants, I guess, you know, presumably you know your client's business better than anybody else, and so you're able to find the right product to kind of meet their, that kind of fits their needs, I guess, more readily.
Yeah, so within my portfolio, we're probably 50% of the businesses that we look after will come from McIntyre Hudson, but 50% come from outside of that. So other accountancy firms, for argument's sake, where they won't have someone specialist like myself to do this role, or we get referred business from other lenders, solicitors, all kinds of different places. It's roughly 50-50.
Can I approach you as an individual business as well for you to act as a finance broker on my behalf?
Absolutely.
Right, okay. Uh-huh. That's really good to know, yeah. So, I mean, what at the moment, we had a huge kind of amount of uncertainty at the end of last year. It kind of dragged on and dragged on and dragged on, and then the powers that be decided it was in everybody's best interest to hold a general election at the key kind of trading period of the year. So, you know, we're not anticipating particularly good trading figures for December, I wouldn't suggest.
No.
But all of that's kind of, you know, as of Friday, all of that has kind of largely, you know, been brushed under the carpet in terms of the bureaucratic kind of process that we needed to go through. What's your kind of sense for how we've come back after the new year in terms of businesses wanting to? Because well, you know, one of the key drivers in the economy must be businesses wanting to expand and scale up, and they need finance to do that. So what's your kind of gut feel at the moment, Greg, for how we've kind of returned after that slightly depressing period pre-Christmas?
So that period pre-Christmas, probably for about 8 to 12 weeks across the market, and we deal with about 175-plus lenders, and they all said the same thing, probably from September to nearly Christmas. It was very quiet. Mm. People were sitting on their hands with the Brexit scenario and then the election. They wanted to quite rightly see an outcome. Since Christmas, it's been busier, but it hasn't been back up to the levels that we would expect.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So it's taking time for people to...
It's taking time. And if I'm honest, we're seeing more people borrow money to plug holes within their business.
Right.
In the opposite direction than for growth at this point
that's
in time.
That's interesting, isn't it? So that's the real danger, isn't it, with investment? It's a very easy tap to turn off, but it's not a very easy tap to turn back on, is it? You know, it's kind of, you know, it's very easy for me to sit here and say, I'm not going to spend that money next month. You know, that £1 million that we were going to spend, we don't need to spend it, I'm not going to spend it. But actually to revisit that and say, yeah, it's back on, let's make it happen, that's a much longer kind of period, I guess, to start up.
I think it goes back to some of the conversation we were having before about, you know, taking the right advice at the right time. Some people have just sitting on their hands for too long. Mm. And then, you know, it gets to the point where we've seen a couple of businesses recently where the owners have come to the realisation after talking to them and looking at the finance options, and they've said, we've left it too late, haven't we? They've come to that own realisation themselves, unfortunately, that they have just left it too late.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, going to the right place, the right people. Yeah. I mean, even if you are a business and you go to your accountant, you know, accountants need to be more proactive. And I'm not talking about the likes of McIntyre Hudson. I'm talking about the smaller businesses out there, the accountancy practices out there that, you know, if your client is now running a cloud-based accountancy system, that you can actually have a look at how their business is running. Mm-hmm. It's don't leave it till the year-end accounts, because by the time you're looking at it, they're another 6 months ahead of themselves. Mm. It's all about trying to be proactive, red flagging little things. And if you have a problem or think, do you know what? I don't know if I'm going to make it for the next 6 months because I've got a corporation tax bill to pay, or I've got a VAT bills, my VAT bills, or my PAYE, which in all fairness, PAYE and corporation tax bills are ones that, you know, do come up most on businesses that are struggling, paying the crown, and you cannot not pay the crown.
So let's kind of pick up on that then as a kind of an interesting case in point. And maybe Adrian, you come in here as well, because, you know, one of our, I mean, we were going back and talking about, you know, earlier in the discussion, we were talking about private equity, venture capital, you know, all this kind of influx of kind of American investment, buying up kind of brands and businesses, and then kind of making a quick buck and exiting in 5 years. One of our most famous brands, you know, with over 100 years of heritage, Norton Motorcycles, has just gone into administration, I believe, in the last sort of 10 days or so. And the reason being cited in the press is because of an inability to pay a crown tax liability, you know, regardless of whether that was VAT or, you know, corporation tax or whatever. I mean, I doubt if it was VAT because, you know, the time frame doesn't fit. But if it was maybe it did. Either way, the point is that, You know, how does a business, guys, get into a position where if you've got a firm of, you know, you're a sizable business, you employ, you know, a sizable number of staff, you've got premises, manufacturing, etc. How does a business like that get into a position where it's clearly borrowing, its working capital is being financed through money that should have been put aside to pay a tax liability at the end of the last trading period? How does that happen when you have a relationship with your accountant, Tracy?
I've got my hand up. A majority of the time is the fact that the people that are doing these jobs within this business have not been trained. And they don't know what they're looking for either. And also, they're not being told the full story of how that business is being run. Because you'll have somebody that's doing one job and somebody else is doing something else to do with the crown, like the management account side of things, and they're not talking to one another. So there's a lot of that sort of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it's about having people that can give you the right advice, get the expert advice, get the training. You train your staff, then red flags will come all over the place and they will highlight that problem as soon as possible. Whether or not the accountant picks it up, you know, but it needs to be done in-house. And if there is a problem, then go speak to your accountant. If you don't go and speak to your accountant, go and speak to somebody like an insolvency practitioner. Even come to somebody like myself at Pecunia, because we are all about preventing all of this stuff. And believe you me, when we look at things like this, we will then engage with IPs to see if we can sort up the whole business out as a whole. We'll look and speak to people like Reg, with the finance side. So you get the whole package from a whole array of experts.
I think as well, you don't, lots of businesses, particularly as they start to grow, Martin, they don't value an FD.
Yeah.
We've seen lots of businesses that don't have an FD. They don't understand where their finances are at. They don't understand the margin that they're making on certain jobs. And they don't see the value of it. And quite a lot of the time, if you are a successful entrepreneurial business, that is because you are a control freak,
right,
if I'm honest, and you don't want to let go.
Yeah.
But as it grows, you have to compartmentalise some of these parts of the business. And an FD is a crucial part of a business. We've got one at the moment, which is a very, very nice business. It's been going for a long time. It turns over nearly £40 million. He started in the back of a van, and the chances are he's going to sell it, and the best he's going to get is he's not going to go bankrupt.
Really?
Because he felt that he couldn't work with an FD. He just keep butting heads with the FD because the FD would tell him he can't spend X amount of money. You know, that is
But then again, that's for a reason. And you can't do this
stuff because
there's a reason
behind it. And
nobody
wants to buy a business that doesn't exist without you.
But an FD function, a proper FD function, where you have proper monthly, quarterly board meetings and understand your financials is essential.
Right.
And so many times we get applications in for funding and the person running the business doesn't understand their own financial or can't even produce them for us, but they expect somebody to lend them money.
Right.
Or when we come back and say to them, you know, you can't borrow money because your business does that, they look at us surprised.
Right. Mm-hmm. And don't expect, you know, because you have an accountant that does a compliance job for you at the end of the year, don't expect that to kind of flag up as a kind of a warning sign on their radar.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously, decent accountants are much more proactive than that.
Oh, there's many of them about, to be honest with you. And I think that because of the changes of how they've had to do their role now for their clients, a lot of them are being extremely proactive. And they also realise that there's a vast amount of the whole process of the accounts that they actually don't understand with regards to cash flow, credit management, funding, all of this, and insolvency. And I think that those that are engaged to get them much more understanding on that can really help and benefit their clients. And if they're engaging with the likes of insolvency practitioners, finance companies, credit management consultancy firms and the like, then they're going to be able to deliver such a better service. And you'll see so many more SMEs not getting to the point of no return. They may struggle, but they can be turned around, and that's the whole key.
Let's bring Aidy in, because I mean, you are on the recording, but largely because of your blocked up nose at the moment, I can hear.
I'm
Man flu. God, I'm surrounded by it.
Adrian's got a cold, by the way, everybody.
Just getting over it. I'm listening.
He's had a couple of weeks off. He's getting over it.
That's a learning curve for me, listening to this anyway. So,
I mean, Adrian, from your point of view, you know, the example that we just kind of quoted with Norton, is that a kind of a scenario that you see a lot of the time with businesses? They're effectively robbing Peter to pay Paul?
Well, yes. I mean, it's a good point what you brought up about HMRC, because they seem to be the last to be paid, because I think their collection methods are perhaps a lot slower than your average trade and expense supplier. And interestingly, you probably know as well, there's a big change on the horizon come the 6th of April. The last Chancellor of the Exchequer announced a measure of bringing back preferential status.
Yeah.
For those that remember preferential status from pre-2002, where the Crown become the next creditor after the secure creditor, pushing back any monies owed to the bank under what they call their floating charge assets, i.e. book debts. So a lot of banks out there, so this could be a big problem for creditors generally and a big problem for banks. And there are one or two banks that I'm aware of that have started to pull the rug already for that simple reason. Now, I know there are some governing bodies trying to lobby the government to try and get that reversed. But that could be... Now, I don't know if... I mean, God, you know, if they make it retrospective, that would be that'd be absolutely Armageddon. But I suspect if it does get brought in, which at the moment it is, it will be obviously going forward. And I think in the government's wisdom, because of the amount of, you know, without going into much detail, you know, the tax schemes and tax avoidance and tax evasion, that there are some very clever people out there and they've found it very, very difficult to combat. So they're looking at other ways. And I think something
Making tax digital is all part of this.
Anything new, people will find a way of scamming it.
But if you think about your VAT return, I mean, I've just done a VAT return because it's due next week. But that covers the trading period, October through December. So in other words, I haven't actually had to pay the Crown any VAT on my sales that some of which I generated over 4 months ago. And it's not inconceivable, therefore, that businesses struggling with cash flow, you know, would have been using that money that should have been set aside as working capital.
Absolutely.
And actually, you know, if they then go under, the Crown won't get their money.
Absolutely. And I just want to make this point, because you touched on it earlier, about Phoenixism, which everybody knows about successive businesses practically doing the same thing under the same name. And obviously there is legislation out there that protects creditors under Section 216 of the Insolvency Act. What the revenue are now doing, they're cracking down on this. So if there's a successor company, they're insisting on what they call a security bond. So you reopen and they put, I don't know how they calculate the figure, but I'll just use an example recently. They wanted £25,000 up front and they put you on monthly VAT returns. And if you stay clean for a year, you get the £25,000 back. That's one of their ways of combating Phoenixism.
So monthly VAT returns, because I was going to say, you know, through Making Tax Digital, you know, if you are registered for VAT, you have to complete your tax return, you know, in a digital kind of format. You know, paying monthly is quite feasible, isn't it?
Well, I think it's more manageable. I think even when it comes to rent, you know, paying quarterly rent, you know, which is difficult. I mean, if you went to monthly payments and perhaps trying to negotiate, because you know there's so much stacked in the power in the power of the landlord, where they have, for example, upward only reviews in their in their leases. You know, it's so difficult at three quarters than to try and find that rent, especially at the Christmas quarter, which is why you find a lot go to the wall around about Christmas Eve time.
And that's the VAT return we're talking about now. This covers the Christmas trading period.
So I mean, if you haven't had a good
trading period, you know, and you've still got to file a VAT return on the sales that you have generated.
That's right. And you've got to find the money.
You've got to find the money. Then you've got your, if you're paying your tax return as well,
course.
And, you know, and one of the big things, like Angel was saying, with a lot of changes on the tax side, obviously last year the reverse VAT for CIS subcontractors in construction.
Have they delayed that now?
They delayed it last October, right, okay. But at the moment it's still geared for the 1st of October year. Okay. And one of the key elements of that is I've been sort of saying, well, if you can do your VAT return on a monthly basis, you're not having the opportunity to spend that.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be there all the time. And now you've got things like the IR35. Now, that's going to have a and is having a massive impact, not so much on the businesses that are employing subcontractors, but the subcontractors themselves. They're going to have to jump through so many hoops. They're either going to have to be employed and direct on a PAY scheme, or be forming an umbrella company, or be part and parse of an umbrella company scheme. So there's a huge amount of element of tax changes in this particular year. And it's going to be very interesting to see how some of these businesses are dealing with that. And my main point is that if you are having issues, chase your debt, get the money in your bank account, but also get some advice. Because there are ways and means of getting yourself out of these problems.
Right. Well, that's what we're. I think what we'll do is we'll play a bit more music, and then we'll, because we've been focusing on the negative, and I think what we'll do is we'll play another tunage, and we'll come back on the other side of this, and we'll focus on the positive.
Yeah. Oh, and there's lots of that about.
Good. So that's what we're going to do. So we will be back after this.
Thank you.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money. Everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
Welcome back, everyone. All this talk about money is making my head spin. that was a song by the Flying Lizards. What a strange name. But money, that's what I want, presumably, desire, need, whatever, all of the above. But welcome back. And in case you hadn't gathered, we're talking about money and we're talking about finance and business and all sorts of things today with our brilliant guests, Adrian and Greg from MHA McIntyre Hudson, and, of course, our resident credit management specialist, Tracy from Pecunia. Before we played that last song, we were kind of getting a bit kind of negative about tax returns and the Crown and kind of changes in legislation. So I think what we'd like to do for the last kind of 25 minutes or so of the show is talk about the positives. And Adrian, you're known as an insolvency practitioner, but let's not use that word.
No.
Let's use the restructuring word.
Yeah, we like that.
Yeah.
Reorganisation.
Because that sounds much more positive.
It does.
Restructuring to me says we're taking positive action as opposed to insolvency, which is we're Absolutely. Dealing with a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me do the intro and then we can build up the positive side. So and this is where we sort of dovetail, like. And anyway, so if somebody comes to me, or business owner comes to me, I can immediately tell just by just looking at the history, you know, long-standing business, good reputation, well-known, etc. And I think to myself, there is an underlying good business here, but it may have, for whatever reason, has been mismanaged. They've suffered a consequence of a bad debt or something of that nature. And there's been a number of occasions where I can sit there. Some IPs might make a case for insolvency, but I think to myself here, and I look at their financing, I'm not an expert on the cost and the levels, and I think to myself, would they be better off talking to an expert that maybe be able to find alternative finance to replace the existing lender? And the cost difference can be quite enormous. That does mean more often than not restructuring the debt over a longer period of time, but it'll get the company back on its feet again. I mean,
there are instances, and Greg, you come in here as well, there are instances where businesses are just paying extortionate rates of interest, and therefore the debt isn't manageable on that level. Yeah. Is that a reality?
It is a reality. I think that, two things on that. I think sometimes it's also the type of finance they're using, which perhaps isn't suitable for what they actually want it for. We've seen lots of companies whereby they don't actually know what they've got. Mm. And when we explain to them what they've got, they then say, I wonder why I didn't have enough money. Mm-hmm. It's because you're using the wrong product for right. what you're after. But there are, again, lots of different companies out there since 2007, 2008, mm-hmm. besides the High Street Bank. Not everybody knows what they do or what they are.
For example, let's say you're a high-volume, low-margin business and you're using invoice factoring or discounting to effectively manage your kind of cash flow and working capital. That actually is eroding margin that already is a very low margin product, for example, and therefore you're effectively, I guess, wiping out your profits. Would that be a reasonable example?
The same as Adrian, we use every case is individual. Mm. So generically, yes, I can see exactly where you're going with that. Mm. And there may be other alternatives. So there's a few out there at the moment that are working on alternatives, such as a sort of an external overdraft type revolving capital right. facility, mm-hmm. which may be more appropriate.
Yeah.
But again, you know, if you're paying somebody to do your credit control function for mm-hmm. you, you know, quite often that can be more cost effective than doing it yourself and paying somebody full time to do that for
right.
you.
Got you.
It's horses for courses at the end of the day.
Yeah. So, Aidy, coming back to you, with your hat on, you're able to kind of take a more objective view of the business, based on, you know, as you say, what you know about the goodwill in the business, it's kind of positioning in the marketplace. It's not just black and white in terms of, look, you know, you guys have got a cash flow shortfall over the next 3 months. You're not going to be able to meet your obligations. Therefore, you know, we need to put the business into...
Well, this is it. I mean, far too often, we see businesses where they've kind of just thrown money at it, whether it's external money or even their own money. I kind of pull my hair out a little bit, because there are ways, we talk about company voluntary arrangements. So we talk about rescue procedures mm-hmm. rather than liquidation. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, I always say liquidation is the last resort. It's inevitable. Some companies have to go into liquidation. It's a fact of life. Mm. You know, they're laden with debt. They've got no custom left. So they've got to do the responsible thing mm-hmm. and to put it into liquidation. But there are other businesses that have got a good order book, mm-hmm. yeah, and they've got a good product, okay, but they need a bit of breathing space, and there is going to be legislation coming. I'm not quite sure at what stage it's at, whereby they introduce a moratorium period, a little bit like they do over in the States. They tried to do it here with the administration to have a moratorium, but it hasn't quite worked. So what they're trying to introduce is a breathing space for companies to allow themselves to talk to alternative
lenders. To restructure. To refinance. Mm.
Without mm. people banging on the door, whether it's
right.
the tax
What a great money. Idea.
Yeah.
So how will that be facilitated in practice? Because that's going to need a cash injection, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily. It will just give the opportunity for an external advisor to come in and sort of act as a some sort of consultant in terms of, because sometimes it's not always distressed businesses. It's sometimes it's underperforming businesses. You know, are they?
Even ones that are over trading.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, about that. Yeah. You probably know more about that than I do. But
so by that you mean they can't deliver on their order book?
Yeah.
You know, we often quite see it, and as I said to Greg earlier on the way down, I went to a seminar recently, and it's amazing how many people don't know how to manage their price structure.
Mm.
You know, what they should be charging, and you know, a lot of them are undercharging.
Mm. Mm.
You know, and that's affecting the volume sales, etc.
Mm.
They don't do any market research, etc., what their competitors are doing. And if they did that, then you'll find they think, oh, no, I don't put prices up, you know, people aren't going to come to me.
Because that is always the big kind of...
Yeah, I
mean,
they'll get that.
You know, customers won't pay that. What are they going to say?
But my argument to that is that, you know, if you're really good at what you do, you've got a great customer service, which we've obviously talked about earlier on, and your product's good or whatever it is that you do is fantastic, they're going to pay for it.
That's right.
Trust me, they will pay for good quality.
Value for money.
And know your value.
That's right, exactly. That is
value
exactly
for money isn't just a function of price, it's all those other things that come
exactly
into it.
What's that saying? You buy cheap, you buy twice?
Mm. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Well, coming back to what Martin said about experience, rather pay an extra 100 quid, but exactly, no, you've got what you want.
Yeah. Quite happy to have done that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Exactly.
So, in actual fact, instead of a business owner thinking, oh my God, I can't ring him, you know, he's going to put my business into liquidation.
Oh, sadly, that is perception.
And it's such a wrong thing. And I always say to people, do you know, okay, they're classed as insolvency practitioners, but they're not. They do so much other stuff. They do a lot of restructuring. They you know, make sure your business can actually be saved. They'd rather save your business than put you through liquidation.
Right.
Because the impact that has, not just on that individual and that business, but also the employees and also the customers and suppliers of that business. Mm. It has a knock-on domino effect.
That's right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about rescue procedures. It is difficult because all stakeholders have got to buy into what the company's trying to achieve. They're asking for time. Mm. They've got a business. They want to ring-fence those creditors.
Mm.
But those creditors have got to buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be aware they're not going to get all their money back. But at the same time, we do get a lot of creditors that don't want to see the distressed business going to the wall either.
Right, so actually they're quite reasonable on their side.
I've had quite a number of calls. Yeah. I mean, the attitudes have changed quite a bit over the years. I've had some where they want you to say, when are you going to start again? Because we feel really sorry for you for a loss of big contract, but we like working with you.
Yeah.
Whereas 20 years ago...
Yeah. We want you to carry on supplying whatever we need to deliver our
Terms,
business.
The terms might change, of course. Yeah. They might have to tighten up on that, you know, CODs and pro forma invoices and so on and so on. But the problem with CVAs have been very much a topical subject in the news because they've been used for a lot of the retail outlets where deals have been done with landlords on non-profitable units, trying to get an extent reduced rates on others, and it's that's what CVA certainly in that context has been used. Very difficult for standalone companies because the suppliers will. Trust is a massive thing.
Mm.
It's huge. And, you know, and to tell somebody, say, well, we can't pay you back 100p, but we'll get 50 to 60p in the pound back. Now to the inland revenue, sometimes that's not attractive. Now, I'm thinking, because it's not their money, is it? It's but you've got the Joe Bloggs in the high street, you know, he's got his own business. He'd rather have half of it back than nothing at all.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. But what I'm hearing, though, is, you know, this is a very sort of involved process. It's looking at the business from kind of, you know, from bottom up.
Yeah.
Rather than top. Top down is easy. It's you haven't got any cash flow.
Yeah.
Bottom up is far more complicated in terms of supply chain, creditors, what does all of that look like? Sure, this must all take time, Aidy, and I guess time is of the essence.
This is the problem. They come to us too late. We're putting out fires, you know, before we can actually get going. Whether it's a wind-up petition, whether there's a bailiff knocking, you know, whether the bank are pressing.
Yeah.
So it's very, 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 very difficult. And And that leads me on, actually, to what my licensing body have done, the Institute of Chartered Accountants England Wales. They've introduced a booklet covering everything what we've just said about getting advice early.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're going to go to the wall. Mm. You know, it means that you can have possibility of turning that business around, access to alternative finance. Mm-hmm. Okay, you may have to make some tough decisions, mm-hmm. you know, cost reduction, sadly staff, but it's about streamlining the business so mm. to turn it into a, maybe, hopefully, a mm. profitable business in the future.
Yeah. You see, me, this should be a kind of an ongoing business yeah. best practice exercise,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
not a last resort exercise. Yeah.
And
you know.
Also think that businesses need to really start looking at, we class it in Pecunia as MITing your business from credit management point of view, because they already do it if they'd have to do it for health and safety and also HR, because there's a lot of things changing there. But the whole crux of it is the fact that the cash has got to be flowing.
Yeah.
And that is the big thing. And yeah. also, please don't feel ashamed. The amount of people I speak to, and they go, I said, well, why didn't you say anything sooner? And they go, oh, I was embarrassed.
Mm.
Or, well, you are now.
Mm.
You know, please be embarrassed.
Yes.
And then go, oh, God, yeah.
Do you know what? We mustn't underestimate yeah. that human
pride.
Human
pride
factor.
Pride is such a...
Especially yeah. in family businesses. Such yes. as, you know, where successive businesses like have gone for generations. You hear about... You know, companies that have been going for a good 100 years mm. through different generations, and then you're
yeah.
the modern generation. It is a pride. It is a pride thing.
And it's all about, you know, us here today, the big thing that we all strive to do is to make sure that the businesses we engage with are stable, are strong, and continue mm. to grow. And that's the whole point that we're here and that we do what we do, because that's what we love to see. Mm. And, you know, please don't think that talking to an insolvency practitioner, they're going to wind you up. Mm. No, they're not. They're going to look at the whole thing,
yeah.
the whole package. Mm.
And but before it gets to that point,
yeah.
go to someone like Greg
yeah.
as an objective, independent third-party voice and put your cards on the table
yeah.
and set him a challenge and say, Greg, can you save my business money
yeah.
on its yeah. finance?
Well, and also, exactly, you just said, it's an MOT at the end yeah. of the day. Probably I would say, you know, I haven't got exact figures in front of me, but yeah. estimating sort of 70% of all the businesses we see mm. have never looked at their financing.
No.
They've just assumed that what they've always had is what they always need. It's always the best price. And yeah. again, you know, some of the high street banks
yeah.
we've seen, they've had facilities, not mentioning any names, mm. they've had facilities since day one. We saw one which was priced on an invoice discounting facility on the, just on the service charge element. It was the same price they'd had on day one when the business turned over about 1.2 million in the right. first year and now turned over 20 to 25
and
million.
And that's a great oh. example, isn't it?
It's costing them over yeah. 100 grand a year.
Yeah.
And they
brilliant.
Never reviewed it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. And there's no later. Better example than kind of paying over the odds for something than the public sector.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got friends that have managed budgets in councils whereby, you know, the only due diligence that was ever done was the kind of the three quote scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the three quote scenario is based on three suppliers
yeah.
that
yeah.
they worked with
anyway
20 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
They always have that yeah. use it or lose it method as well.
Yeah.
Like, we've got
yeah,
a guy
absolutely
that paints
right.
stations and he paints it yeah. three times in quick succession because yeah. the council want to get rid of the cash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise they don't get it back.
I mean,
again.
I'm going through an exercise myself at the moment, a kind of procurement exercise. And and I'm looking at the kind of the kind of the breadth, shall we say, of the quotes that I'm getting in to do what actually is a fairly straightforward job.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, my God, you know, you can see how businesses get into
yeah.
paying over the odds for stuff.
But
you
the
know?
Thing is that there's been a big thing for a long, long time that when was the last time you reviewed your car insurance?
Mm.
Your house insurance.
Well, they force
your
you to
mortgage.
Do it every year. That's a good
exactly.
example. Because they don't, because yeah. they're obsessed with putting their prices up every
oh,
year.
Oh, yes.
They force you to shop around.
Exactly. But also, the thing is that I always say to people that when you're running a business and you're looking after your cash, it's the same as what you do at home.
Mm.
So look at your insurances, look at your PI insurances, look at your finance processes, look at the finance you're getting, look at what your bank's doing for you. Is your bank the right bank for your business where you are today?
Yeah, yeah.
So shop around. Do
we had
like
that conversation
you do.
Earlier as well. Didn't
do you know what? To pick up on that, I think because of like the nature of who we are, and you know, life. It goes a lot faster now, doesn't it? Because of like the world we live in, with social media and digital, et cetera, et cetera, is that once it leaves your bank account, that direct debit on the first of each month, you kind of forget it, don't you?
Yes.
Once it's gone, it's gone. You don't sit there and go, oh, I must review. Now, if you look at the younger generation, my oldest daughter, like, she has more time. It goes back to my point about shopping in, whereas I'm thinking, right, I'll go that shop because it's got everything and I'll save time.
Quick in and out.
But for younger people, they seem to have more time on their hands. They're thinking, because I think maybe they're growing up in this world of social media and online purchasing, is that they don't have the same concept in terms of, I've got to get it done, I haven't got enough time. They seem to have more time in the world, don't they?
You're right.
It's all about understanding the nuances, isn't it? So we're talking a lot about price.
Yeah.
But it's also about understanding what that does for you, what does for you, what that specialist will do for you.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's really important. If you're sick, you go to the doctor because he understands medicine better than you do. Yeah. So, if you need finance, what does that finance agreement
say? That's a good point.
So that's what we do. We make sure that you understand all of the details within that finance agreement, not just the line that says you'll pay X amount per month.
See, I use that great analogy, like we said earlier, the age debt now in a business is the heart of the business. Now, if you had a heart problem, would you just pop along to your GP or would you want to go and see a heart specialist?
Yeah, exactly.
You'd want to go to the person that has actually been qualified.
Aspirin, or would you?
Exactly. You don't want your GP doing open heart surgery in his treatment room. So it is all about having that understanding and knowing that area of business has been something. And I've been in credit management for 30 years. And I know for a fact that we were always the place down the corridor nobody wanted to speak to. Nobody did anything for us. Nobody really gave us a huge amount of training. We had to go out and get it ourselves. And it's such a key element. And everything that is done with that, is also helped along the lines of getting finance as well. And it's getting the right stuff in place.
It's all about advice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm trying desperately myself to be much more and I think what Adrian said is so pertinent as well. I'm somebody like that, who views having to shop around for car insurance or, as frankly a pain, and I'd rather be on the golf course,
It's true.
But what I'm trying to do this year is force myself to make the time to listen to people that know a lot more than I do. And I think that's one of our biggest failings as business owners.
That's why you'd have a broker, because they can do that heavy lifting for you.
Yes.
You don't have to go and find it yourself. You supply one set of information and we'll go do that heavy lifting
but
for you.
But one of our, what you were saying earlier, Greg, one of our biggest failings, I think, as business owners is we keep everything so close to our cards, so close to our chest.
We
want to control every aspect of our business because we see it as it's good in a way in that you know what's going on in every part of your business, but what it also means is that you exclude yourself from really good advice. You take yourself out of that space where you're going to get objective advice that's going to benefit you in the long term, and that's so it's a fine line, isn't it?
Absolutely right.
That's the key thing.
Getting the right advice and finding somebody. And even if that person doesn't even know what you're after, they may well know somebody that does know.
Mm.
So it is worth asking about without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants any advice, then obviously you've got Martin here who's got Supply My Business. There's a huge array of different people on there.
Mm-hmm.
The businesses in Kent, to help businesses in Kent.
And if you ask early, You don't need to suffer the embarrassment exactly. because there's nothing to be embarrassed about.
More options available.
Yeah.
Totally.
So,
I don't think you need to be embarrassed anyway. No one knows everything. So exactly. I think asking no such thing as a stupid question. Please just ask.
Shall we look into the crystal ball for the next 12 months?
Yes, please.
Go on, please.
Who wants to kick off?
Adrian,
You've obviously got something up your sleeve that you want to share.
Because we are in unprecedented times. Okay. We've just left the European Union. Nothing's changed. We've now got 11 months to negotiate this trade deal. Mm. It took 3.5 years to get to this point. So I think even the most commentators out there are sort of saying it's unlikely that we're going to... I don't know if we're allowed to get an extension. So this time next year...
We'll force a deadline.
Yeah. Or we leave with a no deal. Now, I don't know what that will look like in reality. I think we've all got different views on it. But I think the key indicators this year certainly is that what I touched on earlier about the preferential status. We've got a change of governor at the Bank of England coming up. I know interest rates have just been kept at 0.75. And you compare that to 10 years ago where interest rates just plummeted. Yep. To try and motor the economy.
So on the back of a in inverted commas, because you don't use this word, on the back of a recession, which was brought on by a credit crisis, we then reverted straight back to type and started throwing money at people to get the economy moving again.
I think our governing body, the National Association of Commercial Finance Brokers, did a survey recently of brokers. Something like 69% think that by the end of the year we'll have another rate reduction. We actually think the rates will come down. Mm. Wow. The interest rate will come down.
But I also think, and I was having this conversation earlier on, is that, yes, we're out of Europe, but the negativity about this is really disconcerting. And all fairness, there are some massively fantastic businesses in this country that are doing the most amazing trades.
Absolutely.
Manufacturing is up. And it's just it just really does grate on me the negative attitude of some people that aren't even in business. And even those that are in business, I'm just saying out there, please put a bit of positivity to these guys and girls that work extremely hard within their business to keep this UK economy afloat. And
people forget that we are the fifth richest nation in the world?
Well, I think they were saying that when we came out of Europe, I think our economy alone was as big as the 12th placed economy down in terms of the members of the EU.
Oh.
So in other words, the UK alone was over half of
the European Union,
like that. Not in that, but if you were to exclude the kind of the most wealthy nations,
Then even then, are they really that wealthy?
Well,
no.
But no, it is interesting because even brands, you're right. We've got some fabulous brands. We've got some fabulous heritage. But look at Norton, look at Aston Martin. Yeah. Aston Martin.
Well, they've just been propped up, haven't they, by their shareholders?
By Lawrence Stroll, Canadian billionaire.
That's right.
Who, and this is, going back to entrepreneurship, a great example. This is someone that owns a Formula One team, and therefore he's got a global advertising platform that he can just take Aston Martin and he can put that on his car and he can sell Aston Martin as a brand on a global basis.
Yep. Mm.
And Aston Martin would never be able to afford that on an advertising budget level. So, and that's what it needs, isn't it? It needs people that can kind of think outside the box.
Yep.
And those are the people that are ultimately, driving the driving the economy forward. So
and there's lots
that's
of people
exciting.
Out there that do that, and some of them do it in a very small way.
Mm.
And and I'm all for supporting your local business. Obviously, our high streets need a regeneration, and if you support local businesses, your high street will start booming again with smaller businesses. And just really take pride to buy English. Yeah. Because, you know.
AD, were you going somewhere with your crystal ball? Was it about another credit crunch?
No, I'm just interested in people's views because of, like, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we had an election, first one since 1923. We've now left the European Union. Yeah. What does the next 12 months hold?
I think it's going to be positive. But I think that a lot more people need to really have a look at what they're doing and where they're going. And also not necessarily listen to what's on social media and the news. If you're really positive and really have a passion in your business, just go for it. And you know, get investment. Get the right investment, more importantly, and the right funding behind you. But, you know, I honestly do believe that, you know, we've got a great country with great businesses, and I'm sure that we'll do really well. And
fly the flag, now that it's ours again we can, you know, fly it with pride. You know,
I thought it was always ours.
It is always ours.
We just never used it,
you know, and just, you know, say suck it up. It's
well for me, AD, for me, AD, it's all about the environment. That's where I think the new focus is going
to
be.
Kent and the South East have generally bucked the trend over the last 10, 20 years, you know, wherever. But if you look at other parts of the country, which I'm not qualified to talk about because I've not worked in those areas, but I think obviously London appears to be its own own sort of economy.
Isn't it great to see the Cabinet meeting in Sunderland?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that because Sunderland were the first to declare
that? Yeah.
No, but the point is, there's now this huge swathe across the, you know, Midlands and the north of England that have voted Conservative. And what the government's got to start doing...
Well, they've got to deliver now.
They've got to deliver outside of London and the South East. And that, I think, is key.
Yeah.
Now, let's hope we see more of that this year.
Let's hope.
It's been fascinating.
Excellent. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
Having you on the show today. It's been really, really interesting. We have got to kind of draw it to a close. How can people get in touch with Greg and Adrian? What's the best way? Is there a phone number? What's the easiest way to get in touch with you? Ask for you by name and what? Ring a number or?
Yeah, just Adrian Dante at McIntyre Hudson in Maidstone.
In Maidstone. Yeah. Are you based there as well,
I'm
Greg?
Based there as
right.
Well.
So Google him.
It's the building on the roundabout as you come down the hill, isn't it?
Most people know me for the wrong reasons. So you mentioned my name, Adrian. I know who that is.
Right. Well, sadly, we have got to say goodbye.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with some more business news and some more business discussion. But for now, thank you so much, and we're going to play you out with this.
What we need is love, I believe in love. Can't explain all the feelings that you're making me feel. My heart's in overdrive and you're behind the steering wheel. Yeah, listen, touching you. I believe in a thing called love. Just listen to the rhythm of my heart. There's a chance we can make it now. We've been rocking till the sun comes down. I believe in a thing called love. Yeah, 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 yeah. I wanna touch you every minute, every hour, every day. Yeah, baby. You got me in a spin, but everything is A-okay. Listen. Touching you, God, you're touching me.
Channel 2.